Jnanatimirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Dina Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. We're going to read from the Srimad Bhagavatam, text, Canto 7, Chapter 6, text number 19. This chapter is entitled, Prahlad Instructs His Demoniac Schoolmates. Na hi achutam prinayato na yachutam prinayato na yachutam prinayato bahu ayaso Bahu ayaso, buvayaso, suratmaja, bhavayaso, suratmaja, atmatvat, sarvabhutanam. Atmavat sarvabhutanam Atmavat sarvabhutanam Siddhatvad Iha sarvataha Siddhatvad Iha sarvataha Siddhatvad Iha sarvataha Nayachutam prinayato Bhavyaso suratmaja Atmavat sarvabhutanam Siddhatvat iha sarvataha Nayachutam prinayato Bhavayaso suratmaja Atmavat sarvabhutanam Siddhatvad iha sarvataha Nahyachutam prinayato Bhavayaso suratmaja Atmavat sarvabhutanam Siddhadvad iha sarvataha. Chuta prinayato Paya aso prasuratmaja Atmavat sarvabhutanam Siddhadvat iha sarvataha Vaishnavis Nahyachutam prinayato Pabayaso suratmajaha Atmavat sarvabhutanam Siddhadvad iha sarvataha Nahyachutam prinayato Pabayaso suratmajaha Atmavat sarvabhutanam Siddhatvat iha sarvataha Nayachutam priyayato Habayaso suratmajaha Atmavat sarva bhutanam. Tvat iha sarvataha. Na. Not. He. Indeed. Achutam. The infallible Supreme Personality of Godhead. Prinayataha. Satisfying. Bahu. Much. Ayasaha. Endeavor. Asura Atmaja. O sons of demons. Atmavat. Because of being intimately related as the Supersoul. Sarvabhutanam. Of all living entities. Siddhatvat. Because of being established. Iha. In this world. Sarvataha. In all directions. In all times. And from all angles of vision. Translation. My dear sons of demons, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Narayan, is the original Supersoul, the father of all living entities. Consequently, there are no impediments to pleasing him or worshiping him under any conditions, whether one be a child or an old man. The relationship between the living entities and the Supreme Personality of Godhead is always a fact, and therefore there is no difficulty in pleasing the Lord. Would you like to repeat?
Yes.
My dear sons of demons,
my dear sons of demons,
the Supreme Personality of Godhead,
Narayan,
is the original Supersoul,
the father of all living
entities. Consequently, there are no impediments to pleasing him or worshiping him under any conditions, whether one be a child or an old man. The relationship between the living entities and the Supreme Personality of Godhead is always a fact, and therefore there is no difficulty in pleasing the Lord. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. One may ask, one is certainly very attached to family life, but if one gives up family life to be attached to the service of the Lord, one must undergo the same endeavor and trouble. Therefore, what is the benefit of taking the trouble to engage in the service of the Lord? This is not a valid objection. The Lord asserts in Bhagavad Gita 14:4, Sarva yoni shukonteya murtaya sambhavantiya tasam brahma mahajonir aham bija pradapita. It should be understood that in all species of life, O son of Kunti, are made possible by birth in this material nature, and that I am the seed-giving father. The Supreme Lord, Narayan, is the seed-giving father of all living entities because the living entities are parts and parcels of the Supreme Lord. Mamaivamsho jiva-bhuta. As there is no difficulty in establishing the intimate relationship between a father and son, there is no difficulty in reestablishing the natural intimate relationship between Narayan and the living entities. Svalpamapyasiddharmasya trayate mahato bhayat. If one performs even a very slight devotional service, Narayan is always ready to save one from the greatest danger. The definite example is Ajamil. Ajamil separated himself from the Supreme Personality of Godhead by performing many sinful activities and was condemned by Yamaraj to be very severely punished. But because at the time of death he chanted the name of Narayan, although he was calling not for the Supreme Lord Narayan, but for his son named Narayan, he was saved from the hands of Yamaraj. Therefore, pleasing Narayan does not require as much endeavor as pleasing one's family, community, and nation. We have seen important political leaders killed for a slight discrepancy in their behavior. Therefore, pleasing one's society, family, community, and nation is extremely difficult. Pleasing Narayan, however, is not at all difficult. It is easy. One's duty is to revive one's relationship with Narayan. A slight endeavor in this direction will make the attempt successful, whereas one will never be successful in pleasing his so-called family, society, and nation, even if one endeavors to sacrifice his life. The simple endeavor involved in the devotional service of Shravanam Kirtanam Vishnu, hearing and chanting the holy name of the Lord, can make one successful in pleasing the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has therefore bestowed his blessings by saying, Param Bijayate Sri Krishna Sankirtanam. All glories to Sri Krishna Sankirtan. If one wants to derive the actual benefit from this human form, he must take to the chanting of the holy name of the Lord. Om Agyanati Mirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Midatam Dina Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manopishtam Stapitam Dina Bhutale Swayam Rupa Katahmayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Uta Parakamalam Sri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatham Bitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Sadvadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Sri Vishakam Vitamscha Namaum Vishnu Padaya Krishna Preshtaya Bhutale Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Niti Namine Namaste Saraswate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Deshatarine Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Preshtaya Putale Srimate Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Tinamine Sri Varshabana Videvi Daitaya Kripabdaye Krishna Sambandha Vigyana Daine Prabhave Namaha Madhuryo Jvala Premadya Sri Rupanuga Bhaktida Sri Gaura Karuna Shakti Vigrahaya Namostute Namaste Gauravani Sri Murtaye Dinatarine Rupanuga Virudhapa Siddhanta Dvantaharine Namo Gorakishoraya Sakshad Vairagya Murtaye Vipralambara Sambode Padambu Jayate Namaha Namo Bhakti Vinodaya Sakchidananda Namine Gaurashakti Swarupaya Rupanuga Varayate Gauravirvava Bhomestvam Nirdesa Sajjana Priya Vaishnava Sarvabhoma Shri Jagannathayate Namaha Vancha Kalpaturubhyascha Krupa Sindubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Namo Mahavaranyaya Krishna Prema Pradayate Krishnaya Krishna Chaitanya Namne Gaura Tvishe Namaha Panchatattvatmakam Krishnam Bhaktarupa Swarupakam Bhaktavataram Bhaktakyam Namami Bhakti Shaktikam Hey Krishna Karuna Sindho Dinabandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Jayatam Surato Pangor Mama Manda Matergati Matsarva Swapadambo Jau Radha Maranamohano Divya Vrindaranya Kulpadrumadha Srimad Ratnangara Singhasanastau Srimad Radha Shila Govinda Devau Prishta Libhi Sevya Manusmarami Srimad Rasarasarambi Vamshiva Tatatastitaha Karshan Venu Swanir Gopir Gopinatha Shriyestunaha Tapta Kanjana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vrindayai Tulsidebhyai Priyayai Keshavasyacha Vishnu Bhakti Prade Devi Satyavachai Namo Namaha Shri Nishinga Jai Nishinga Jai Jai Narasingha Dev Lada Desha Jaya Padma Mukha Padma Bringa Yada Yada Hidharmasya Glanir Bhavati Bharata Abhyutanam Adharmasya Tadatmanam Srajamyaham Paritranaya Sadhunam Vinashaya Chaduskritam Dharmasam Stapanarthaya Sambhavami Yuge Yuge Manmana Bhavamad Bhakto Madhyaji Mam Namaskuru Mami Vaishasi Yukvaivam Atmanam Aparayanaha Sarvadharman Parityaja Mamekam Sharanam Braja Ahang Tvang Sarva Papebhyo Mokshai Shami Masrutaha Shushusho Sharadhanasya Vasudeva Katarichi Sian Mahat Sevaya Bipra Punyatirta Shevanad Shinvatam Swakata Krishna Punya Shravana Kirtana Hridyantaksto Hyapadrani Vidunoti Suritsatam Nashta Praeshu Bhadreshu Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya Bhagavati Utamashloke Bhaktir Bhavati Naishtiki Tada Rajastamo Bhava Kama Loba Dayashchaye Chaitaiter Anavitam Stitam Satve Prasidati Evam Prasanna Manaso Bhagavad Bhakti Yogataha Bhagavad Tattva Vijnanam Mukta Sangha Sajayate Vidite Radeye Grantish Chijante Sarva Samshayaha Shiyante Chasya Karmani Drishtevat Manishvare Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Om Namo Bhagavate Narasimhaya Namaste Jas Tejase Avirabhir Bhava Vrajanaka Vrajadamsa Karmasaya Randaya Randaya Tamo Grasa Grasa Om Swaha Abhayam Abhayam Atmani Bhuishta Om Shom Na Yuchat Na Yachutam Prinayato Bhavayaso Suratmajaha Atmavat sarva bhutanam siddhatvat iha sarvataha. My dear sons of demons, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Narayan, is the original Supersoul, the father of all living entities. Consequently, there are no impediments to pleasing him or worshipping him under any conditions, whether one be a child or an old man. The relationship between the living entities and the Supreme Personality of Godhead is always a fact, and therefore there is no difficulty in pleasing the Lord. This is a statement by Prahlad Maharaj, who is in his classroom with the other children, and when the teachers, Shanda and Amarka, who are sons of Shukracharya, Shukracharya means the guru who is only by coming through seminal discession but without qualification, and Shunda and Marka are similarly disqualified, that they don't know about spiritual knowledge, but they're simply acting as priests. But they're teaching something materialistic in the school where Prahlad was placed by his father. They had great hopes for him to become another Hiranyakashipu, and they had put him in the best private school possible. And each time he came back home from school, it was a Gurukula, so he was away from home, his father would ask him what he learned, and each time he just told him something about Krishna. He would say that, "I've learned that people who are attached to the material world can't get out, and they should go to the forest, Dad." And each time he became very angry and disturbed, and he told the teachers, "You're teaching him something wrong." And they said, "We're not doing anything. We're not teaching him this kind of thing." And after several times bringing him back, Hiranyakashipu wanted him killed, actually, because he was so angry that this boy, although he wasn't being taught by his teachers, was naturally a devotee. And he considered him to be an enemy because his brother, Hiranyaka, had been killed by Vishnu. And he had to Hiranyakashipu had to console his family about that. That death, and he was a bitter enemy of Lord Vishnu. So now his son becomes a devotee of Lord Vishnu, Lord Narayan. And so Prahlad, though, was undeterred. He went to school, and whenever he got the chance, he would begin teaching his classmates this transcendental knowledge. And our topic over the next few days is how devotional service can go on under any circumstances. There's no impediment to devotional service. And interestingly, there's a way in which when there are impediments, we get more impetus. When there are no impediments, Queen Kunti says, Janmaishvari shutta shibirena mana madapuman naivar hat yabit. Yabhi tatum vai tomakinchana gocharam. Try that again. Janmaishvarya shruta shibir edamanamadapuman naivarhat yabhi tatum vai tomakinchana gocharam. In this verse, Kunti Devi, when praying to Krishna, says that whenever I have opulence, then I forget you. But when I don't have anything, there's nothing left, then my prayer, she's saying, if someone is intoxicated by what they have, and what are some of the things people can have? She names Janma, a high birth. Have you ever met anybody with a high birth who was proud of it? Anybody? Anybody know anybody of high birth? Yes? You knew some politicians of high birth? Were they proud of their position? Prabhupada told them, and then there's Janmaishvarya Shuta Shibir. There's Aishvarya means people, some people have a lot of wealth. Anybody meet anybody with a lot of wealth?
Yeah.
Yes? Prabhupada told a story to Hansa Duda about doing outreach to people with a lot of wealth. And he said that in the forest, there is the king. Who's the king of the forest? Traditionally? That must be the lion. So the lion's the king of the forest. And one day, he got a bone stuck in his throat. And he put out a royal edict that anyone who can come and take that bone out of his throat and relieve his pain, to such a person he would give a royal boon. So all the animals were thinking, I'm not going in there. And it means you have to reach down in his throat, take the bone out. So finally a crane came along and he said, okay, I'll do it. And he reached his long neck in there, found the bone, pulled it out, cast it aside, and he wanted his bone. So he was standing there waiting, and the lion's looking at him, "What are you still doing here?" And he said, "I'm waiting for my royal boon." He said, "You just had your head in my mouth, and you want a better boon than that?" So Prabhupada said, sometimes we go to give Krishna consciousness to very wealthy people, and they think just because we get to walk in their house or see their collection of cars or something like that, that should be good enough, right? You got to see me, didn't you? So there's this intoxication that comes from Janmaishwarya, Shruta Shibir. People are very beautiful. They become caught up with that, intoxicated, Kunti Devi says. Inamanamada Puman, Naivarhat Yabidatum Vai, Twama Kinchana Gotram. She says, on the other hand, someone who has nothing, they're a kinchan, they actually can pray to you with sincere feeling. Therefore, she calls Krishna a kinchana gochara. A kinchan means something. And akinchana means I don't have anything. Akinchan. And so akinchana gochara, that's those who don't have anything in this world. It doesn't mean that you have to be homeless. But what it does mean is you have nothing that you call your own in this world. Isavasamidam sarvam yat kincha jagatyam jagat tena tyak tena bhunjita magradha kasya suddhanam. Everything animate or inanimate within the universe is controlled and owned by the Lord. One should therefore accept only those things necessary for himself, which are set aside as his quota, and we should not accept other things, knowing well to whom they belong. A devotee understands that everything belongs to Krishna. Srila Prabhupada frequently gave the example of Maharaj Ambarish, who although possessing unlimited opulence as a king, used all of it in Krishna's service and was considered a great devotee, even though he was in that royal position. And there could be somebody who has nothing, has no material possessions in this world, and have a demoniac mentality at the same time. So it's not dependent on whether one has wealth or doesn't have wealth, high birth or low birth. That's not the point. The point is the mood of akinchan. And anyone can develop that mood of akinchana, that I have no one, nothing in this world to protect me except for the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, Bhagavatam, Shukadev Goswami says, Samasrita ye parapalava plavam mahatparam punya yasho marade bhavam budirvatsa param param padam 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 yadvipadam natesham. That Krishna is the only shelter of the entire cosmic manifestation, and he's the killer of the Mura demon, and therefore one should take shelter of him. And then says that don't take shelter here in the material world, which is vipadam. It means that every step is dangerous. Anywhere you go in this material world at any time, there's danger. You can lose your life. And also, Shukadeva Goswami says, Deha patra kalatra deshu atma sainye susatsupi tesham pramatonitanam paschana pina paschiti. That foolish people in this world take shelter of a family members or wealth, and they think that these things will protect me. There's a cocoon in which Prahlad Maharaj says the person engrossed in material life weaves himself into. He weaves himself into a cocoon and is trapped by his own arrangements for material happiness and protection. And then he can't understand his relationship with Krishna anymore. But deha patra kalatra deshu, deha, my body will protect me if I'm just healthy enough. Sometimes people put a lot of energy into going to the health food store and working out and making sure they're so fit. And some of the fittest of them die. When Jack LaLanne died, I said, that's it. You know, anybody can die. Did you know Jack LaLanne? He started the fitness movement back probably in the 30s or 40s. He was the first one on TV to start, you know, showing how to do calisthenics. That was a revelation to people of America who just like, really? Exercise? Okay. I mean, now it's commonplace. There's a gym on every block, you know, open 24 hours. But he started the whole thing. And, you know, he'd be on on television with his leotards on doing all these exercises. Okay, ready? One, two, three, four, go, you know, and all this stuff. When he was in his 80s, he used to swim across the channel in the freezing cold water, towing behind him several boats tied to his feet and so forth. And he was everywhere. I think he finally just dropped dead when he was 90 years old or something like that. And then it's like, if Jack LaLanne can die, anybody can die. So people take shelter of the body, and then they think that if they're surrounded by family members, their family members will protect them. And then there's a natural way in which the mind goes to money. And Prahlad Maharaj mentions this in his prayers later to Lord Nrsingadev. He said, my mind's always polluted. It wants more and more money. And why do I want money? Because there's a way in which I think if I have enough money, then I can buy my way out of anything. I'll have comfort in this world, and maybe even I'll protect myself from death. But Prabhupada points out that he knew a person who was very wealthy, and when he was dying, he was telling the doctor, look, I'll give you $1 million if you just give me one more year. And the doctor, you know, what could he do? Even Prahlad points out in his prayers to Lord Nrsingadev, Balasya neha sharanam pitaro nrsingha nartasya chagana mudanvati majato no taptasya tat pratividir yaihanjasheshas tavabibo tanubritam twarupekshitanam. He said that parents can't protect their children. This is a scary statement for parents everywhere in the universe. You can't protect your children. That's Prahlad Maharaj saying. And then he says that a boat on water can't save a drowning man. And he said the doctor can't save a patient. My friend Satyadev Prabhu was a paramedic for 20 years. It seems to me he knows more than most doctors because he had to make so many decisions at the moment and many, many times a day about how to administer, you know, first aid to people, check their medications to see what they overdosed on and all kinds of things like that. And I asked him one time, how many people did you save? And he said, I never saved anybody. He had this realization that he never saved anybody because he said there were people that should have lived and then they died. And there were people that were definitely supposed to die and then they lived. And he said, all I did was prolong their suffering of many people. We prolonged their suffering. And that this boat on water, if you're not meant to drown in the water, then the Lord will save you. If he's indifferent to you, then you'll go down. If he's upeksha, if he doesn't give you his, if he doesn't rescue you, if he doesn't help, then you'll go down. My uncle just was telling me the whole story of my grandfather, who was a wealthy man because he was an inventor. And he invented mechanisms for ships at the time that saved fuel economy going across the ocean. And he began inventing in Detroit for the auto industry. He made lots and lots of money. And he was like a premier travelers. And when the Titanic first came out, when it was christened, then the first voyage, which we all know, right, didn't work out so well, the Titanic... He got on the Titanic with a promissory note that hit the money for the rest of the trip, and went across the channel, and then, anyway, he had a promissory note. He got on the Titanic, and then the money didn't wire through because his bank, somehow there was some glitch from the bank. And so he had to get off. He got off with the first captain after it crossed the channel, and the rest of the boat went on. And he got on another boat later that followed behind the Titanic. And, of course, the Titanic sank, and everyone went down with it. And, you know, he was disturbed that he wasn't able to go on the first voyage, of course, until he found out what happened. But who could judge that? So I may make so many arrangements in this world to save myself or to protect others and so forth, but ultimately we can see that we're not in control of these situations. So a person who's materially absorbed thinks that all these things can protect me, but Shukadev Goswami says, Atmasaine so satsapi, these are fallible soldiers. Tesham pramatanitanam paschanapi na paschati, And although people see them, because they're an illusion, they don't see the reality of it. They don't understand it. So in this verse, Prahlad Maharaj is speaking to his classmates, and he's telling them about Achyuta, the infallible Supreme Personality of Godhead. And that's what Achyuta means, that Krishna is infallible. He's never lazy. This is one thing about Krishna that Gajendra points out. And that is that he's always attentive to our needs and desires. Is that scary?
Yes.
Thank you, Dharma Prana. Sometimes we do a seminar where we teach people that in a meditation, that there's a desire tree. And we explain that a desire tree is a tree which will fulfill any desire that we have. If you just sit under it and you ask, I want blank, fill in the blank, it will immediately fulfill your desire. And then we have people in the guided meditation walk, sit under the tree, and then we turn them loose and we say, okay, what do you want? And it's interesting because people really don't know what they want. And the problem is, one may have material desires, and if I ask for those things, then I'll get them. And then it's a problem for me. So if I sit under the tree and I say, please let a bag of hammers fall upon my head, and then a bag of hammers comes out from the tree and falls upon my head, whose fault is that? So Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, ye yata mam prapadyante tamstataiva bhajami aham, mama vartmanu vartante manushya parta sarvasha, that I'm reciprocating with every living entity in all circumstances, and I'm fulfilling their desires. And as they surrender unto me, I reward them accordingly. So Krishna is infallibly rewarding the desires of everyone in the universe, and he's the perfect moral agent. Everyone in the universe, every living entity in the universe, is getting exactly what they deserve. What is everyone getting in the universe? But you have to say it emphatically. They are getting
exactly what they deserve.
Did you ever hear anybody say to somebody else, you're getting exactly what you deserve? And that's what the Shastra says. Yes, Swindra Gopa Matavindra Mohosa Karma Bandhanu Rupa Palabhajana Matanoti Karmani Nirdahati Kintu Chabhakti Bhajam Govinda Mari Purusham Tamaham Bhajami. Lord Brahma says, every living entity in the universe is getting exactly what they deserve. So, from Indra, the king of heaven, down to the Indra Gopa germ, which is the most insignificant living entity, little tiny little red insect that you could barely see with the naked eye, they're all getting exactly what they deserve according to their previous karma. So, Krishna is the perfect, infallible moral agent, and Gajendra says in his prayers to Krishna, you're never inattentive, you're never lazy, you're always minutely observing the psychic movements and the mood of the living entity to see what his desire is, and then he fulfills the desire of the living entity, and he does so in a neutral way. Samoham sarvabhuteshu name dveshos dinapriyaha. He's not attached, and he's not envious of anyone, and he simply fulfills their desire because he's given free will. He says, the living entity, you take what you like. And so there he is observing as Achyuta, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And then Prahlad Maharaj says that he's the father of all living entities. And that in this word, Atmavat, Srila Prabhupada gives us the translation, because of being intimately related as the Supersoul. Tadejati tannaijati tadure tadvantike tarantarasya sarvasya taru sarvasya sibhayataha. The Shri Upanishad says, the Lord is far away but he is very near as well. He is within everything, and yet he's outside of everything. So this is a meditation that can enliven us at any time to remember that Krishna is the closest person to us. And not only that, he's Suridam, means the best friend. Our most intimate friend is there within the heart. And we'll find in the fourth canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, when Narada Muni is giving the allegory to King Prachinabhari, that there's a way in which the two swans are swimming, and one of them greets the other and says, "You've forgotten me for so long, and you've gone away from our relationship." And the Srila Prabhupada explains how this is indicative of our relationship with Krishna, that we have this eternal relationship with Krishna, but somehow we've gone away from that. And so, Sanitya Nitya Sambandha Prakritischa Paraivasa. The Brahma Samhita says we have this eternal kinship with the Lord. It's actually never broken, but I can neglect it. I can go in the other direction. And we can consider how intimate this relationship is, the intimate relationship we have with Krishna. And it is, he's the best friend. It means that ultimately, I have no other real friend in this world except Krishna. And that in whatever situation I'm in, he's always there for me. That's a real friend. A real friend is there in every situation. No matter what I do, he doesn't judge. So, sarva bhutanam, and that's true of every living entity. So, whatever we meet, whomever we meet, wherever we go, we can understand that every living entity is precious and has an intimate relationship with Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And that the very purpose of the material world, Krishna's Srishti Leela, is to reclaim those living entities who have forgotten him. He breathes out, does Mahavishnu, and with it comes the entire creation. His impetus for breathing out the material world, and as it emanates from his pores, then the creation takes place again. It's going on eternally. That means there's no beginning to this cycle. It's always going on. He's giving another chance for all the living entities within the universe who are his intimate parts and parcels, but who have become separated from him, to reconnect. So we can understand how important it is to perform the service of reconnecting a living entities with Krishna, because that's the very purpose of the material creation. And so, then, after Prabhupada points out, through quoting the verse from the Bhagavad Gita, that Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita that he's the father of every living entity, again, indicating this intimate relationship, he then talks about how grateful Krishna is. This is one of his qualities, that he's grateful. He never forgets anything. He's infallible. He's always attentive, and he's extremely grateful. And in the Bhagavad Gita, svalpam apyasya dharmasa, you consider this word su-alpam. So alpam means a tiny bit. And su-alpam, and this is spoken by Krishna. He says, su-alpam, if that's how much you do for me, that guarantees you that you'll never be lost. If you do this much service, su-alpam, tiny, tiny little bit, any little bit you do for me, then you'll be saved from the most dangerous type of fear. And Krishna explains in the sixth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita how if someone performs any kind of service, that he'll remember it in his next life because Krishna reminds him. And in fact, after each creation and destruction of the universe, subsequently. All living entities are again wound up within the body of Mahavishnu, and they stay there for millions and millions of years in a state of suspension called susupti, where there's no dream, there's not even dreaming. And Krishna then remanifests the universe, and as soon as he does, he reminds every living entity of what their previous desires were when the creation was wound up again, and then they start over again. And so every tiny endeavor in devotional service or contact with devotees or advancement in devotional service is recorded, and it is kept in the bank account, the eternal bank account of each living entity. Prabhupada said it, that there's a bank account in the heart of every living entity, and every time one performs some service, that's a deposit. And when one has enough of a deposit, when you have enough capital, you can really get something started. And then Shraddha is born, or faith. Faith in the process of devotional service, which is the beginning. So that comes from Agyata Sukriti, or this unknown wealth of devotional service performed unknowingly before one even knows what it is. And then one can begin the process of devotional service. And then Prabhupada mentions this story of Ajamil. And Ajamil, the story of Ajamil comes in the sixth canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, just after Shukadeva Goswami describes to Parikshit Maharaj, at his request, what hell is. And he tells all about the universe, and he says about how living entities who are engaged in pernicious activities then have to be punished by the laws of material nature for their own purification. It's actually mercy, so that they'll come to a point of sweet surrender. And then Parikshit Maharaj is disturbed by this. He wants to, because he's compassionate Vaishnava, he wants to know how they can be saved. And then this section, the sixth canto, called Poshanam, or Protection of the Living Entities, begins with the story of Ajamil. And Ajamil, although he fell down from his dutiful path as a Brahmin, actually the Acharyas say he was more inclined toward Karmakanda, but he was a dutiful Brahmin. He was saved because he named his son Narayan, and near the time of death, he chanted Narayan, and Krishna took it. Actually, he remembered Narayan when he said the name. But Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says, even earlier when he was calling for his son, Narayan, 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 please come here to eat, Narayan, please, let's, time to take rest now, and so forth. If you chant Hare Krishna, even one time, Shastra says, you'll destroy more sins than you can commit. So then Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, so why was it that Ajamil went on sinning? It seemed like he was sinful to the very end. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says that those sinful activities, after he had been inoculated by the power of the holy name, we're like being bitten by a snake with no fangs. Sometimes the snake has its teeth taken out. You'll see this if you walk around Govardhan Hill sometimes. These kids walk around with a little basket, and they come up to you and say, here, look at this. And they open it, and the cobra, ha, it jumps out. And people, they jump. But those cobra don't have any teeth because they've been removed, so they can't hurt you. And so Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says that those sins couldn't hurt Ajamil after that. He was bitten by a toothless snake. And so this is how grateful and Krishna is. If someone simply says Hare Krishna, then without any expectation of result, they're not saying it because they want to clear their sins so they can sin some more. If they innocently say the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, they become free from their sins. And they'll be able to take up the process of devotional service. Then, finally, Srila Prabhupada says, one's duty is to revive one's relationship with Narayan, and a slight endeavor in this direction will make the attempt successful, whereas one will never be successful in pleasing his so-called family, society, and nation. In one lecture, Prabhupada mentions about how there was one woman, Mrs. Patel, and she wanted to join the movement and serve full-time. But her family wouldn't let her go, even though the kids were grown up and she had performed many duties. He walked 1 hour in the rain just to come to Bhagavatam class. And then they wouldn't let her go, and Prabhupada said, just see, this is the material world. You can serve and serve and serve and serve, and ultimately nobody appreciates it. And certainly, we serve the senses. The devotee prays, Kama dinam katina katida palita durnideshas tesham jatamayina karuna natrapano pashanti. Utsri jayatanata yadupate samprata labda buddhis tamayata sharanam abhayam mam niyukshva madasye. That for how long and how many ways have I served the bad masters of my senses? They never gave me mercy. And they never gave me time off either. Your senses ever give you time off? Any time off? They're always demanding 24 hours a day. It's okay, now feed me, now look over here. It's like, a devotee who's becoming self-realized understands that he's really at war with his senses in a way. The senses are pulling him in every direction, Prahlad Maharaj says. And this devotee who's saying this prayer realizes that I've never been given time off. I've been a slave to my senses and they're bad masters. This is a powerful revelation. The bad masters of my senses. And I never even questioned them. He said, but now my intelligence has awakened. Labdha buddhi. I'm awakened to a different reality. He says, now my focus in life is to serve Krishna. Now I'm approaching Krishna and saying, please give me some service, some personal service to you. And no longer will I serve the bad masters of the senses. And so if one makes a comparison for what you get for working hard in the material world and what you get from serving Krishna, Krishna wins every time. You get a bunch of grief. We call it insult to injury. Adding insult to injury. Did you ever hear that before? It's an old saying. He added insult to injury. The person's already injured, and then you go and insult him and say, yeah, and you're ugly too. So it's like you're injured, you're already down and hurt, and then someone comes and insults you. And that's what happens in the material world, actually. That's why it mentioned in the 11th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam about Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He removes the insults of the material nature. It's an embarrassment for the soul to be in this situation. That's why we have to make the best use of a bad bargain. It's embarrassing to get a bad bargain, let's face it. Isn't it? You ever got one? Bad bargain? You come back to the car, wife or husband said, you got ripped off. What'd you do that for? Where? Take it back. Well, the guy said that's a one time, there's no returns. And that's what we got. There's no return. You already bought it. Now you got to make the best use of the bad bargain that you just got. And so there's no taking it back. Therefore, Karabhajana Muni says, Deyam sada paribhavagnam abhishta doham. That the way to rectify this situation, now that you've got the bad bargain, he said, take shelter of Lord Chaitanya's lotus feet. Worship Lord Chaitanya's lotus feet. You can reverse this. You can turn this thing around. Deyam sada paribhavagnam abhishta doham. He says, those feet are worthy of meditation. That's where you can place your attention, on the lotus feet of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Deyam sada. You can always think of them, and you'll always be happy and rewarded by thinking of those lotus feet. Paribhavagnam. So gnam means to take away. And paribhava means the embarrassment of this, of living in the material world. It's actually an embarrassing situation, and everyone's trying to cover it over. That's why the cosmetic business is so big. I saw the woman in front of me today, yesterday on the airplane. We had this tiny little plane we got on, and I saw her in front of me, and she had these long nails, and she painted them gold. I was thinking, that's a weird color. But in any case, she had these gold nails, and she was like really spending a lot of time, especially on one nail, trying to fix it. I think, you know, when it's all said and done, that is a fingernail. If it ends up in your soup or something like that, you're going to sue the restaurant. You'll never eat there again. You may never eat that kind of soup or soup ever again. But I'm sitting here adoring my fingernail thinking, this is so nice. But it's actually, it is what it is. And there's a way, I mean, there are more nail salons in every city than banks, restaurants, clothing stores, and everything else. I found that out when we were going to shop, going around. It's like, how many nail salons can you have in one city? And I realized, unlimited, because there's a lot of fingers and toes to cover. But there's a way in which there's this, the whole package that I get in the material world, it's a disappointment. No matter how I try to paint it or, you know, cover it up or put a new style on it. And you see, people, when they're aging, you know, they try a new style and they try to look a little jaunty, get a little hat, something, you know. And it's embarrassing. There's a dwindling and then a dying, and it is what it is. It's a bad bargain. Don't try to cover it over. But if you take shelter of Lord Chaitanya's lotus feet, that embarrassment of having accepted the bad bargain of a material body, it's rectified. It's taken away. Paribhavagnam, and then what do you get in return? Abhishta doham. You get the innermost desire, what you really want all this time, that's fulfilled by taking shelter of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's lotus feet. And then just to complete the thought, Tirtaspadam Shivaram, Shiva Varinchi Nutam. Karabhajana Muni says that that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's lotus feet are the personification of all the holy places. So if you bow down there, you get the benefit of going to all the holy places. Tirtaspadam. And he says, Shiva Vrinchi Nutam Sharanyam. He says, Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma, they surrender to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's lotus feet. How do they surrender? In the form of of Brahma Haridas, who comes in Chaitanya Leela after his faux pas in Krishna Leela. He stole away Krishna's calves. And then he was embarrassed. And then the next birth, he took a low birth, but he was in Chaitanya Leela. That was Brahma Haridas in his next life. So Brahma is represented as the servitor of Lord Chaitanya's lotus feet in Chaitanya's Leela. And then Lord Shiva comes as Advaita Acharya. And so they're worshipping Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's lotus feet, Lord Shiva, Lord Brahma. Therefore, Karabhajana Muni is saying, then why wouldn't you? If these great controllers of the material universe take shelter of Lord Chaitanya's lotus feet, you should also. And then he says, Shiva Varinchi Nutam Sharanyam, that the lotus feet of Lord Chaitanya are a boat that can take you across the material world without any trouble. You can be transported across the material nature. So these are a few points, and we're remembering that Prahlad Maharaj is speaking these. And if anybody had an excuse to be morose or disappointed about his life, Prahlad Maharaj did, because he had a very abusive father, to say the least, who tried to prevent him from taking to devotional service, and he tried to kill his own son. But Prahlad Maharaj never gave up chanting Hare Krishna, and he's glorified more than any other devotee because he was tested. And this is a very important point, that we may consider that we have many obstacles in life to our devotional service and then think, well, this is a disqualification. No, it's not. Actually, it's an opportunity, because the more you're tested, we say we want unflinching devotional service. But unless you're given an opportunity to flinch, how are you going to know if it's unflinching or not? How are you going to be able to test your own mettle and see, can I go on chanting Hare Krishna in all these circumstances that are coming before me? And one who does becomes very strong and comes to a realization that in all circumstances, Krishna is there to protect me, and there's nothing that can stop me from advancing in devotional service. The attitude of a devotee is very important. I am in correspondence with a devotee who lives in France, and she was paralyzed. She grew up in a devotee family, and she was paralyzed when she was just young. She was playing with her friends, dove into a river, and broke her neck. And she's paralyzed from the neck down. And every time I read her letters, I become inspired, because there's not even a trace of self-pity or entitlement or anything like that. In fact, she excels in everything that she does. She sent me a painting. It's the most exquisite painting of Govardhan Hill. And around the border of the painting is written in Sanskrit, a verse glorifying Govardhan. And then I came to know that she had painted it herself. I asked her friend, I said, how does she paint it? She holds the paintbrush in her mouth, and she does these paintings. And she preaches. The devotees tell me that her preaching to other people is extremely vibrant and enthusiastic. And she induces many people to come to Krishna consciousness, travels to the Dham, goes on trains, off trains, so forth, but never thinks once. In fact, her attitude is that, Krishna has given me a special advantage in this lifetime to remember him in a way that nobody else has. And so there's no impediment to someone who remembers how merciful Krishna is, how powerful he is, that he's grateful for anything that we do. And in the most debilitated circumstance we can be in, even if we simply remember, if we simply think about Krishna and intend to serve him, even if we can't move a muscle, like Bali Maharaj, actually, he was a devotee. Actually, he was born in a demoniac situation and became the king of the demons. And when he was performing sacrifice, Lord Vamana came with the intention of purifying him, purifying all his wealth by taking it away and so forth. And his first inclination when he saw Vamanadeva was to surrender to him. But he couldn't do it right then, because he was surrounded by all his colleagues who were all demons, and that's a little uncomfortable. And he was right in the middle of a sacrifice, and his guru was there, and everyone, he couldn't just say, oh, there's Vishnu, let me bow down. So he had to go through this whole process. Vamana came to him and he begged him for some charity. He just said, 3 paces of land. This is good for the Sankirtan devotees to remember, that we ask, what do you want? Just a little bit. Just give what you can. That's what Vamanadeva's line was. 3 paces of land. And he said, take more. I'm the emperor. You can get more than that. He said, it's crazy. You don't come to the emperor. You're a dwarf. Ask me something big, because I have everything. And he said, no, 3 paces, because if I want more than that, then I won't be satisfied. If I'm not satisfied with these 3 paces, I won't be satisfied with anything. You just give me these 3 little paces of land. Shukracharya is saying, don't do it, don't do it. It's Vishnu. He's going to rip you off. That's what he does. And so, but in his heart, he decided, I'm going to surrender. He couldn't do it right away because of the circumstances. And later on, you'll find in that chapter that the demigods want to know, how did he get such a benediction? And the answer is because Krishna knew his heart. He knew he wanted to give up everything. And so even if a devotee, when a devotee is in an externally disadvantageous situation, so many reversals in life, so many things can happen to us, and they will happen, believe it. If the devotee has this bhava, which is, I'm going to surrender to Krishna, then Shastra says that supadamulam bhajata priyasya tyaktanya bhavasya hari priyasaha vikarma yach chot patitam katanchid tunoti sarvam hridi sannivishtaha karabhajana muni. And he says that if the devotee in his heart has this feeling that I'm a servant of Krishna, I'm going to surrender to him, even if there's a mistake in his life, he falls down, he has a misstep, vikarma yach chot patitam katanchit, somehow or other he gets hit with some vikarma and he does a wrong thing, very wrong thing. He says there's no need for prayaschitta, which means trying to make up for that individual sin. All he has to do is go on with his devotional service because Krishna is there within the heart. He's entered within the heart of the devotee and he knows that the devotee swapadamulam bhajata priyasya tyaktanya bhavasya. That means that his bhava is tyaktva, to give up everything for Krishna, even if he can't do it right then. Krishna knows his heart and he rectifies the devotee from within. And furthermore, Shastra identifies a certain stage of life we go through, of devotional life, that is, when we're neither here nor there. It means we're in the middle, and that's where most people are. The Shastra says that there's two people that are happy in this world. The Paramahamsa, who's on the topmost platform, and the complete fool. The fool's happy because he thinks, you know, I got a pickup truck, and I can drink beer, and I'm good, because there's, you know, I don't know, what do you go to? The monster truck pull or the... Do you have those in Canada, monster truck pull? Where do you have them?
We still have Smash and Up.
Okay, so I got a pickup truck and some beer, and I'm going to the Smash It Up Derby. I'm happy in life. And then the Paramahamsa and everybody else in between on the path of devotional service, who can see that there's a higher level, but it hasn't given up hasn't been purified of all material desires, has to suffer. It's a good thing, the suffering. It's purifying. But Krishna says, jatashada matkatasu nirvina sarva karmasu, that person, although he knows that he's disgusted with the material world, he thinks he knows sense gratification is bad, Veda dukat makan kamams, he knows that all material desires lead to suffering, but parityage pyanishvara. Ishvara means like the supreme controller, like Ishvara Paramakrishna, but it also means the power to do something in your life. So he says, parityage, to give up all these things, to give up sense gratification and my attachment to it, and act rightly, I don't have the power to do it completely. Parityagya pyanishvare. So Krishna says, okay, that's a stage you're in right now. He says, go on with your practice of devotional service and be happy. And at the same time, regret the fact that you can't do it, and you'll come to the perfect stage eventually by going on with your devotional service. None of these verses are meant to be taken advantage of, because the minute I do, then I'm insincere and I'm disqualified from the spirit of the verse itself. So we're taking shelter of Prahlad Maharaj today, especially because Lord Nrsingadev came for Prahlad Maharaj. And you'll find throughout this whole description of Lord Nrsingadev in the Bhagavatam, there's very little said about Lord Nrsingadev and a lot said about Prahlad Maharaj and what he said. And actually, the devotee, in one sense, is more important than Krishna, because he has love for Krishna in his heart. And that's what we want, really. We want love for Krishna. And the devotee has that within his heart. So we're hearing from Prahlad Maharaj throughout the day what he's telling us to do. And today he's encouraging us that We're intimately connected with Krishna. There's no impediment to our devotional service. If we simply go on sincerely with the practice, we'll be successful because Krishna is all-powerful and he's all-merciful. He's our best friend. Om Tat Sat. Reflections? Comments, Maharaj, please. Do you have a microphone for Maharaj? Okay.
So this is the question that's come up with devotees. In the case of Prahlad Maharaj and also Dhruva, who are both like 5-year-olds, and that's relevant. You see it in the lives of personal devotees.
Well, in the Brihat Bhagavatamrita, Sanatana Goswami says that these luminary devotees sometimes take missteps specifically to teach others how to make a comeback in spiritual life and to encourage us. This is in the second volume of the Brihat Bhagavatamrita, and he mentions several great devotees and says that this is part of their teaching process, that if they're just perfect all the way through, then everyone will feel like, oh, I can't do that. But if they show some slip and then they right themselves afterwards, then others will take heart. And that's how he explains it, that this is, that's their prerogative. And Prabhupada also weighs in on this and says that it's the nature of the material world that there are, because of the force of eternal time. We were just reading yesterday about Bhishma Dev and how he ended up on a bed of arrows. And incidentally, he also ended up on the wrong side in the battle, which is mentioned in the Shastra, that he fought for on the wrong side. Now, how did that happen? He's one of the 12 Mahajans. And it's explained in that section that these are the arrangements of the Supreme Personality of Godhead because of his all-powerful feature as time. And the Prabhupada says we should understand that he has some arrangement, he's making some arrangement. We can't see what it is, but he's making some arrangement. And also to understand that there's a verse that gave me a lot of solace once. In fact, even recently, I was in some heavy managerial situation that was really vexing me. And I went to some godbrothers who were visiting. I sat with them and I said, I can barely sleep because of this problem. And it's really bothering me. So I need to open my heart to you and tell you what's going on. And so we talked for an hour or so. And about a week later, one of them sent me a verse. He said, I just came across this verse. I think this matches your situation. It might help you. I don't know, but check it out. So I read the verse, and sure enough, right after I read it, I thought, I'm cured. It's like medicine. I took it, and I'm better. I could actually feel it. You know how you feel an anxiety from doing management? Yeah, okay. And then, what if you had a pill you could take and you'd feel better, right? That was it. It was like that. I little Dixie cup and it, took the pill and, hey, that worked. So the verse is from the fourth canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. It was about Prithu Maharaj. And Prithu Maharaj, he also had, some, what we could say was an indiscretion because, he was trying to perform 100 horse sacrifices, and Indra is the only one who's famous as performing 100 horse sacrifices. And of course, he got really envious of Preeti Maharaj when he had done 99. And Preeti Maharaj was just getting ready for the next big sacrifice. And Indra said, nuh-uh, no way, you're not doing this. So he came down to the sacrifice and he stole the horse. You know, it's like kids when they're playing, you know, someone comes and rips out the goalpost and it's like, bring it back, you know, and he runs off with it. Indra disguised himself as a sannyasi. He came as a fake sannyasi, and he stole the horse and he took off with it. And the son of Preeti Maharaj, Vijitasva chased after him, and then he realized, oh, it's a sannyasi, I can't do anything. And then someone told him, actually, that's Indra. And then he was about to kill him, and then Indra changed his dress again. He came back. There were different orders of sannyas, so he kept putting on these different orders of sannyas. And Prabhupada mentions there, incidentally, that's where a lot of the fake, he's the origin of fake sannyasis, because he was, you know, he's such a powerful personality, and when he put on all these different fake garbs to steal the horse, that started the whole thing. In any case, every time, because there's so much respect for the cloth, you know, for the sannyasi vesh, that Vijitasva didn't kill him. He let him go every time. And then Preeti Maharaj became so angry. He wanted to kill him. He was going after Indra. He said, that's it. I'm angry. I'm going to deal with this, you know. And Brahma had to come. So Brahma came down and he said, Indra, just let it go. And then he spoke this verse. And he said that even in the lives of very pious religious people and devotees, there are these inexplicable reversals that come about in their lives. And he said, if you try to rectify them, then you'll enter into the darkest regions of anxiety, trying to rectify these providential occurrences in your life. And he said, so just tolerate it. You know? And then Prabhupada's purport echoes that and says that, you know, sometimes we see that in the lives of even very advanced, you know, great personalities, these things happen. And what can you do except for tolerate? So a few things there. Yes. Oh, I'm sorry. I misspoke. So Preeti Maharaj let it go. He said, okay. And Brahma said, just be happy with 99 and let Indra have it. And so he let it go. And that doesn't directly answer your question, but that part of it. But it indicates that there are reversals even in the lives of great personalities. Anything can happen in the material world because of the Lord's Kala energy. And then the other point is by Sanatan Goswami, that they do these things just to show us how to rectify ourselves when they do happen. Like, what do you do after this slip occurs? And they show by their example what you have to go through.
Yeah, I think a really powerful
result. Does anybody have a light of the Bhagavat? You got it?
Yeah.
Oh, great. Verse number 43 of the Lila Bhagavat, Prabhupada gives a commentary about how once one starts the process of devotional service, that one way or another, one will come to the process will come to fruition. And he gives the example in this verse of the autumn season and how it's mating season. So once there's mating, then the female is pregnant, she's going to give birth sooner or later. It's going to happen. So he gives this example that once one starts the process of devotional service, that it will come about. And in the Nectar of Instruction, Prabhupada says that even if one changes one's mind about the process of devotional service, then it'll be forcibly dragged back home, back to Godhead by that process. But in the purport, which I'll read to you in just a second, from the light of the Bhagavat, Prabhupada says that the mistakes one makes while performing devotional service may not be detrimental, but they may become the pillars to success in one's life. And just since you brought up Arjuna and, you know, and this really interesting and excellent point, Maharaj, just all the really powerful, or many, I should say, of the very powerful teachings in the Bhagavatam come after some kind of mistake. I mean, the whole Bhagavatam is preceded by Parikshit Maharaj uncharacteristically becoming angry and hanging a dead snake around the sage's neck. So it's an encouragement to us that so many things might happen to us. We may even lose control of our senses. But if we go on with the process of devotional service, not only will we be rectified, but we'll learn from that in a very powerful way. Thank you. Wow, I've never seen this before. I see it's from India. I've been to India. And there, with the help of simple people. Okay. Marsh, can I read this? This is text number 43 in the light of the Bhagavad. Everyone okay? Yes? Okay. In the autumn season, all the birds, beasts, and men become sexually disposed, and the bull, the stag, the male bird, the man, and other male creatures forcibly impregnate the fair sex. A similar impregnation takes place as a result of devotional service to the Lord. Devotional service to the Lord never goes in vain. Just at the right moment, the result of one's particular devotional service will come, even if one has no desire for it. The pure devotees do not wish any return from the Lord in exchange for their service. They do not make business exchanges with the Lord. But the Lord, out of his own accord, fulfills all the desires of the devotees. It may appear that a devotee of the Lord is becoming poorer and poorer in terms of material prosperity, but factually he is not. The typical example is the Pandavas. The five brothers headed by King Yudhishthira underwent all sorts of difficulties because of the conspiracy of their cousins headed by Duryodhan. But in the long run, King Yudhishthira was enthroned by Lord Sri Krishna, and his enemies were vanquished. King Yudhishthira was never disturbed by all the calamities that overcame them, even though Lord Krishna was ever their companion. The Pandavas never prayed to the Lord for anything but his devotional service, and in due time everything came out in favor of the devotees. A devotee, therefore, should execute his devotional services with full energy, endurance, and confidence. He should perform his scheduled duties. He should be pure in heart, and he should serve in association with devotees. All six of these items will lead the devotee to the path of success. Particular note, one should not be discouraged in the discharge of devotional service. Failures may not be detrimental. They may be the pillars of success. One must have good faith in the regulative principles followed by the self-realized souls, and one should not be doubtful about the ultimate result of such devotional service. Rather, one must go on executing his prescribed duties without hesitation, and one should never be influenced by unwanted association. We should never consider going back to God as a plaything. We must take it seriously as enjoined in the scriptures. For a strict follower, the result is sure and certain. And when the time is right, the result will come of its own force. Can I read that again? We should not consider going back to God as a plaything. We must take it seriously as enjoined in the scriptures. For a strict follower, the result is sure and certain. And when the time is right, the result will come of its own force. Dhruva Maharaj went to worship God to gain something. But when he actually came in contact with God, he did not want anything from the Lord. The Lord, however, awarded Dhruva Maharaj both benefits. That is, the Lord fulfilled his desires and also gave him eternal salvation. Such are the lessons we learn from all the revealed scriptures. The Almighty God awards the results we desire, and therefore we should desire that which is eternal, blissful, and full of knowledge. In devotional service, we should not endeavor for that which is temporary and useless. Just a note that I was just bringing attention that it never goes in vain, and at the right moment, the result of one's particular devotional service will come even if one has no desire for it. That's pretty unique, isn't it? And it comes of its own force in its own time. Actually, in the process of chanting, in this the sixth canto about Ajamil, which Prabhupada mentions here, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says that just like a fruit grows on a tree in its own time, you can't force it to grow faster. So similarly, the result of your chanting will also manifest in due course of time. You can't rush it. And that the Lord gives results differently to different people for various reasons. Are there any more comments or questions? Yes. Yes. Well, Krishna actually knows what those issues are. That's one thing that we can depend on, and it's been one minor theme in the class, is that Krishna specifically knows the mentality of every living entity intimately, and he knows exactly how to rectify it. Can I have... who's grabbing the books? I forgot. 10th canto? 10th canto, 14th verse. Of course, in the verse, Tate nukampam susumikshamano bunjana evatma kritam vipakam hridvagvapurvir viradam namaste jivant yomukti padesadaya bak. Lord Brahma speaks this verse from his heart, saying that the devotee is always waiting for the special mercy of the Lord and compassion of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. All the while, he goes on tolerating the suffering that comes to him in this world. And he does that remembering that it's his karma. Like, I came up to Dharmaprana this morning and I said, how are you? And he goes, leg. I don't know, he said, leg hurts or something like that. And I said, oh, and he goes, karma. It's like that. It's like, and he's so resolute about it. It's like, you know, yeah, karma. You know, like, right, that's the verse. You know, the devotee's thinking, you know, yeah, karma. And he's like happy about it because it's like the karma's going away. It's just burning off. It's my karma. I did it. It came back to me. And yeah, so now I'm in devotional service. This is almost finished. You know, it's going away. And so then in the purport, we'll find that the great Bhagavatam commentator, Sridhar Swami, says that sometimes even after surrendering, that the devotee has a residual effect of previous desires. There's a tinge there. There's still something left, even after beginning the process, devotional service. Yeah, 10th canto, 14th chapter. Thank you. And so, I'll just read it to you because this purport is a masterpiece. Where the word susamikshamana indicates that a devotee earnestly awaits the mercy of the Supreme Lord even while suffering the painful effects of previous sinful activities. Lord Krishna explains in the Bhagavad Gita that a devotee who fully surrenders unto him is no longer liable to suffer the reactions of his previous karma. However, because in his mind a devotee may still maintain the remnants of his previous sinful mentality, the Lord removes the last vestiges of the enjoying spirit by giving his devotee punishments that may sometimes resemble sinful reactions. The purpose of the entire creation of God is to rectify the living entity's tendency to enjoy without the Lord, And therefore, the particular punishment given for a sinful activity is specifically designed to curtail the mentality that produced the activity. Although a devotee has surrendered to the Lord's devotional service until he is completely perfect in Krishna consciousness, he may maintain a slight inclination to enjoy the false happiness of this world. The Lord therefore creates a particular situation to eradicate this remaining enjoying spirit. This unhappiness suffered by a sincere devotee is not technically a karmic reaction. It is rather the Lord's special mercy for inducing his devotee to completely let go of the material world and return home back to Godhead. And so when you mentioned that, I thought of Sudama Brahman. And it's a wonderment how he was given, he was very poor, he was a pure devotee. He went to see Lord Krishna on the request of his wife. He didn't want to go because he didn't want to ask for anything. So, but he thought, I'm glad she's pushing me in this way because this will give me an excuse to go see my friend Krishna. And that's the motive he had. He wanted to go see Krishna. He thought, okay, my wife told me to go. And then, of course, when he met the Lord, he had an overwhelming experience. And Krishna took the little offering that he had brought, you know, the chipped rice, and he took a little bit of it. And then when he came home, his entire, whatever was there, which was, he was very poor, so skinny, he couldn't even afford a little bit of flat rice to bring to Krishna. His whole house was transformed into a palace, like heaven, better than heaven. And his wife had transformed. There were servants everywhere and opulence beyond belief and so forth. And it's mentioned there that Sudama had a very slight tinge of attachment to being poor. And therefore Krishna rectified it by giving him this situation. He was attached to being this austere, you know, some slight attachment was there. And Krishna knew his mentality precisely. So he rectified it in that way. And then Prabhupada explains in that section that other people, they get rectified the other way. That Harishe Tadanam Shanai, when Krishna shows his ultimate mercy to a lot of people, he takes away their money. So they can't do anything and they have to depend on him. Prabhupada says that was my situation. I had this plan to make a lot of money to spread Krishna consciousness, and then Krishna took it all away. So I had to come to your country penniless and start doing my service like that without any help at all. So my point is that Krishna knows exactly what the mentality is and he knows exactly how to rectify it. And whatever we experience as an inconvenience or some kind of friction that's coming is coming from Krishna. He's putting that situation so we can get completely purified of the last vestiges of attachment to the material world. Okay? All right. Nirkula? Yeah, you can depend on it, and you can speed up the process if you want to be daring and make a prayer that Krishna, please, you know, remove these, do whatever you want to remove these last vestiges of desire. That's a very daring prayer, isn't it? Huh? Do your worst. Do what you have to do to purify me. Yeah, and Bhaktivinoda Thakur points out that most of the demons that Krishna kills in Vrindavan have their archetypal of various anartas that are there within the heart. We should start a chorus, the new babies chorus here, Nirumuna. And that Krishna, he easily killed these demons. Nonchalantly, even many of them, and so that they're represented as various anartas within the heart of the living entities. Prabhupada explains that in the verse I mentioned earlier about the parents can't save their children and so forth. He says it doesn't mean that you don't try to. You do your best. Do your due diligence. You know, if something happens, you have to try. He said, but at the same time, you should know very well that whether you're able to do it or not is up to Krishna. And so one can and must do one's due diligence in whatever varna and ashram you're in to plan your life in a responsible way so you can do your service. But if it doesn't work out after you've made your plan and you've done your due diligence, you have to find what the message is and see how Krishna is directing you in a certain way. That's all you can do. It's the best you can. Shannon? Sure. Well, you have to have a longer-term vision. And Prabhupada was giving that to us in that verse I read from the Light of the Bhagavat, where he's saying that success is sure and certain for the strict practitioner. He's saying, look at this. You're going to make it to this point. And if you have that in mind, if you have the goal in mind, it probably gives this example. Man gets on a train, and he doesn't get the seat he wants. This happens sometimes in India, you know, there's a mix-up, and then the train takes off, and then, you know, there's a fight for the seats, and you're going to end up practically with nothing. And so he said, one person, they might make a big stink about it and fight over the seat for the next 3 hours on the way there, and then put out bad vibes to all the people sitting there, everything like that. Or he said, someone, a more intelligent person will think, it's only 3 hours, I'll just stand up. Because what's 3 hours? He knows it's going to be over soon anyway, so why be involved with it? So if we have a longer range vision that this life is over very quickly and that we're going back to Godhead or engaging in even more, we'll have more facility for service the next life, what's the difficulty in this life? Why, you know, struggle over these kinds of things? So that's the part where we can become happy, you know, understanding we're on a long-range project here and we're going to be successful. Even like Mukunda, who was one of Lord Chaitanya's servitors, who was the great kirtan leader and so forth. But then when Mahaprabhu was doing his Mahaprakash, 21 hours he sat on the throne of Vishnu, and he was giving out benedictions to all the devotees. And then everyone said, you called everybody but Mukunda. And Mahaprabhu said, I'm not calling Mukunda. Mukunda's a rascal. Mukunda comes to our association and he sits here with the Vaishnavas and he listens. And then he goes and he sits with these Mayavadis and he listens to them too. He said, I don't want him here anymore. I'm not giving him a benediction. And Mukunda was in the room, but he was behind a veil. He could hear what was going on, and the devotees went to Mukunda and told him. He began weeping. He said, just ask Mahaprabhu when I can see him again. And they went back to Mahaprabhu and said, he just wants to know when he can see you again. And Mahaprabhu said, in a million births. And then they went back and told Mukunda, you get him in a million births, Mahaprabhu said. And then Mukunda started dancing. He said, oh, I will see, I will see, I will see. Who cares, million births? I'll take it. And then Mahaprabhu went and embraced him because of his mentality. He had become purified. And then in the Light of the Bhagavat section, Prabhupada says, sometimes in the rainy season, the Chaturmasya, you know, it's a time for this 4 months of austerity. If you want to follow Chaturmasya strictly, you eat once a day and you eat Havishan. It's mung and rice cooked together with no spices, no salt, no nothing. And you have to eat it off the floor. And you have to put your hands behind your back when you eat it. And that's how much you get to eat every day. And then the rest of the day, you're engaged in, you know, hearing and chanting and doing nothing else. This is a Chaturmasya. So he said this students and sannyasis, they come together and they follow the Chaturmasya for 4 months, and they stay in one room practically. And he said, it's very hard, it's very difficult to understand how much you're getting out of that tapasya while you're living in that one room in the 4 months. He said, but when you go out, that's when you know, I did something here. Something's different. I changed. The world looks different. Everything's different. And I have had this experience at Govardhan. We go there for a month and we lock in for 30 days of just hearing and chanting. We go on the parikram in the morning, we come back, and then there's 5 hours of just, you know, hearing in the day, and the rest, you know, doing the temple programs and things like that. And it's day after day after day of same exact schedule. And sometimes, I mean, the mind can even, you know, after day 22 or something like that, it's possible, you know, the mind can say, like, let's do something else. But you hang in through the full 30 days, and you don't notice it until you go back out again. And then all the devotees who stay in there for the whole time, they always say, how was it? It changed my life. I'm different now. It's a whole different world for me now. Everything's changed. And so Prabhupada says, they don't know about the Chaturmasya till they go out. And then he says something so profound, that our lifetime is a Chaturmasya-like existence. This one little boxed up life that we have where I think, you know, I'm a man, I'm a woman, I have this situation, these are my parents, this is my money, this is what I get, you know, all this, that's one little room, one tiny little room, and our existence is this Chaturmasya-like existence. But we're performing devotional service, and then he says, you won't know the full result until you leave the body. You won't see it. So you have to keep these things in mind, that you already won. You're another big winner. And it's not like those things you get in the mail. It's the Bhagavatam telling you you won. And keep in mind that you're a winner. You won the biggest lottery of all time. As Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is like reminding, like the poor man who meets the astrologer, and then the astrologer says, hey, wait a minute, you're not poor. You're actually the richest guy in the whole country because your father left you the treasure. You just have to dig it up. So we should keep that in mind, along with along with our struggles, along with the fact that I still have attachments and everything like that. Understand, you're already a winner. See? She just smiled. You could have already won. Were you about to say something? Apoorva was going to say something? Okay. Oh, stretching. Okay. No, prayers and thoughts don't come from the same place, because the thoughts are called these vrittis. They're impressions that we get from within the closed system of the universe. Described in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says that Prakrite kriyamanani gunai karmani sarvasha ahankara vimudhatma kartaham iti manyate. Generally, the thoughts, I'm not talking about thoughts relating to devotional service, but just the impressions and thoughts in general are collected in the mind over many, many lifetimes, and they're from within the closed system that Krishna describes as that's going on automatically. Prakrite kriyamanani, it's like a machine going on. I don't know. And so one has to, then there's a way in which Krishna says there's a way of receiving knowledge and information that's from beyond that closed system. And he says, Tatvavittu mahabaho guna karma vibhagayo guna guneshu vartanta iti matva nasajite. The person, when he comes to knowledge, understands that there's information that comes from outside the system of the three modes of material nature. And once one takes that, then one's connected to something that's outside this closed system of karma. And so prayer, which is coming from the heart, or which we're taking from the Shastra, and so forth. It's a different thing altogether. Golokera Prema Dan Harinam Sankirtan. And the devotee, who prays sincerely, as Prahlad Maharaj will point out in his prayers, which we'll hear over the next, today or tomorrow or the next day, he analyzes what kind of prayers Krishna accepts. Because he's thinking about how the demigods had already prayed. He's being asked, you pray, because this appearance of Vishnu, nobody recognized. Even Lakshmi said, is that my husband? I don't recognize him in this form. He's lost at this time or something. He's so angry that it's he's scaring everyone in the universe and about to tear it apart. And, so they all offered their best prayers in perfect Sanskrit, and he was still furious and unpacified. So they pushed Prahlad forward and said, you try. And then he's looking at his situation, and he says that everyone tried already. They already gave perfect prayers. They know Sanskrit. They're in the mode of goodness. And then he says, I'm a demon. What can I say? I come from look at my dad. That's the guy he just killed. So then he's analyzing, how all these different qualities of the material world, manye dana bijana rupa tapasu taujas teja prabhava bala paurusha bhuta yoga naradanaya hibavanti parastipumso bhaktya tutosha bhagavanga jayutapaya. He says, you consider that all these different qualities people have in the material world, manye dana, wealth, rupa, they have beautiful forms, tapa, they have austerity, shuddha, learning, auja, which means, a strength. And he names all a long list of qualities that you can have in the material world. And he says, but I don't think through any of these things, the Lord is satisfied. But then he remembers at the end, bhaktya tutosha, bhagavan gaja yutapaya. What about Gajendra? He was an elephant. He couldn't speak Sanskrit. He didn't know anything. He didn't even know who God was. He was an elephant. But he tried. He did it sincerely. And because he did it sincerely, he pleased Krishna. Bhaktya tutosha. There was a little tiny, simple bhakti in it, what he did. Simple bhakti. And he was an elephant, and he offered it, and then Krishna was pleased. And he said, Bhaktya tutosha bhagavan gaja yutapaya, the king of the elephants, he pleased Krishna. So he said, now I know the secret. Anyone who's sincere, if they sincerely pray to the Lord out of love, then he'll accept that. I'm not going to take about the love part. Just, he says, sincere. If they're sincere and they offer prayers, then Krishna will accept it. And then he says, so anyone who wants to pray to the Lord, if they have this sincerity of heart and purpose and they call out to the Lord, then he'll accept it. And Prabhupada, in one of his small books, he mentions one way to pray. He said, coming before the Lord, he says, my dear Krishna, I'm being tossed in this ocean of material nature, this way and that. And he said that kindly help me. I'm being tossed by the waves of the material energy. And Prabhupada says you should reveal your heart to Krishna. Tell him how you're being tossed by the waves of material nature. It's like this and it's like that. I'm being tossed this way and that way. So obviously Krishna's, he knows what our thoughts are and he knows what our sincerity is. And there's a difference between the two. The thoughts are running on in this course of material energy, automatic, machine, but the sincere prayers are coming from the soul. And that's what Krishna wants. That's the only thing, that's what he's really looking for. Everything else is business as usual. But as soon as someone decides, I'm going to surrender to Krishna, and that flavor of surrender comes out, that's what attracts Krishna. One tiny little lesha, as it says in the Shastra, if there's a lesha of surrender, a lesha means like a whiff. It's like if somebody walked through the room 10 minutes ago with some incense and you walk in and go like, that sandalwood? You know, Krishna can smell that. If you had a sincere desire at one time, you know, he's like, yeah, that's there. There's sincerity in that. That sincere desire is there. Then he said, that person can come to know everything about Krishna. But a person, you know, who tries on their own through the intellect and so forth, they can try for millions of births and they'll never know anything. It's the only price is that sincere desire and prayer. Yes. No, because gratitude's not a, it's not a mental, it's not an intellectual process. Real gratitude flows naturally from the soul because of our intimate connection with Krishna. And it's the most natural thing in the world that we feel grateful because we're being, at every second, we're being lavished by Krishna with our life, you know, our very life. It's a simultaneous realization that I'm part and parcel of Krishna, and I'm being maintained by him, that the gratitude comes out from the heart in a natural way. And there's nothing wrong with that, offering prayers of gratitude to Krishna. You know, it's a very wholesome and powerful and recommended process. That's what, you know, real sacrifice is. You know, I'm offering it back to Krishna out of gratitude, not out of just a routine or something like that, but I'm appreciating. Like, look at this apple. I remember the first time, when I first started reading Bhagavad Gita, and I read this verse, Patram Pushpam Palam Toyam. And I was walking up to high school for the day, and I had an apple in my bag. And I was thinking about the verse, and I said, well, let me try it. And I remember taking the apple out of my bag, and I stopped where I was walking, and I said, I'm going to offer this to Krishna. And I just started, you know, it's like, you know, I didn't know how to do it. But I was like, would you take this? You know, like, you know, please take this apple. It's like, and I was thinking about, what is an apple anyway? It's like a perfect, you know, thing with a wrapper on it and everything. And it was just sort of offering, and I felt this reciprocation that I could never deny. It was one of the great experiences of my early devotional life that I felt like, wow, that worked. That really worked. I offered an apple, and he like, you know, he reciprocated, you know. So those are, you know, available experiences. Krishna's saying, do it, you know, like, offer me things. And that's the real essence of what sacrifice means. Yajna means, like, I'm getting all these things. Let's offer them back to Krishna out of gratitude. They ask questions about what it's like to be sincere. You know, the quest... the quest for sincerity, and in fact, Prabhupada gives these kinds of statements like, you know, the minute you think you're liberated, the minute you think you're sincere, then you're a rascal. But there's this quest for, you know, like, how can I be more sincere? That's an indication of sincerity. Because sincerity means without pretense. It means you're not trying to show something that you're not. You're not covering anything over because you really want the real thing. You've come to the point where you're saying, I don't want to pretend anymore. I really want the real thing, and I'll do anything to get it. And I don't care the external circumstances. That's what sincerity means. Because the word sensere is Latin. It means without wax. Because they used to mine this marble from the quarries, and then the most valuable is the white wax with no lines in it. So these cheaters would take it out, and then they put wax in the where the lines were. They chisel it out, take the black line out, and they put in white wax. So it looked like a perfect piece of marble, but it was fake. And then it would melt later with the heat, and you get this substandard marble. And so, you know, this feeling that whatever the consequences, I'm going to be straightforward and not try to hide my, you know, whatever faults I have and so forth. This is sincerity. So, you know, you can analyze yourself in ways in which, if I, like drinking water underwater on a fast day, this is mentioned in the Shastra, that I'm fasting, but why am I fasting? Because everyone will think, wow, he really knows how to control his senses. He can fast. And then I go to the river, and everyone's taking bath. And then when I take my bath, and I'm dry fasting, I don't drink any water. So I go underneath the water, and underneath I go, and I start drinking water. And I think, nobody can see me. And that's insincere, because you're doing it for the wrong reason. You're trying to make a show that I'm a faster. I do this, I do that, I do it like this, because I'm thinking about, but since and the mood of sincerity, the feeling of sincerity is that Krishna's watching. And therefore, real spiritual integrity comes especially in solitude. Integrity within solitude, that means when nobody else is watching, how do I organize my life? What are my habits? Is it different? Is it drastically different from when I'm in front of certain people? If so, you know, I'm putting wax in it. I'm showing something that I'm not. And it's disarming when somebody actually becomes vulnerable and exposes their faults, and they're willing to be like open. Everyone wants to sit up and listen. You notice that, like, when somebody's actually being real and honest, and they just show who they are for whatever they are, then everyone's like, wow, I'm going to listen to this. Otherwise, it's like, it's not so interesting. It's like, I know, I do the same thing. You got something to show, but, you know, I could show that too. But when somebody actually is like, all right, this is who I really am. I'm really fallen, and this is, you know, then everyone's like, wow, this is interesting, and it's compelling. So there's a whole world to live in sincerity, you know, it's a whole cultivation, and the very fact that we're trying to cultivate it means sincerity. Okay? All right. The best prayer of all is the prayer with Prahlad Maharaj, after he's offered, Lord Nrsingdev tested him, because, you know, he came for Prahlad, and then he tore apart Hiranyakashipu, and then Prahlad offered his prayers. The Lord was happy, and he said, now take a benediction. And Prahlad said, no, thank you. I'm not a merchant. I'm not serving you because I want something from you. That's not me. Somebody else, not me. And then Lord Nrsingdev said, no, take something. He said, no, thank you. He said, look, I'm Bhagavan. I give, you take. Take something. He said, okay, if it's your desire, I'll take. As service, I'll take something from you. And then he said, please liberate my father, the one who just, you know, abused me, tried to kill me and everything. Please give him your best blessing. And Lord Nrsingdev said, that's already done. It's automatic. And then he said, okay, if you want to give me a valuable benediction, give me this, that from within the core of my heart, there will be no material desire. That's the benediction I ask for. And that verse, I can print it out later, and we can sing that verse. There's a few really nice verses we can sing. But that verse is really powerful, and you can say that to Lord Nrsingadev all year long. And really, that's the protection that Lord Nrsingadev gives. When he's in the Dham, you'll see, notice that at the very tip of Govardhan Hill, there's a Nrsinga temple. And the Vaishnavas go there. And it's not because they get in the Vaikuntha mood all of a sudden, they want to see Lord Nrsingadev when they're there in Govardhan. But Lord Nrsingadev is intimately connected with Lord Chaitanya's Leela, in that he removes the obstacles, bhakti vigna vinashana. He removes the obstacles of devotional service. And those obstacles are within me. They're the unwillingness to perform devotional service. It's like how'd that guy get in there, that demon? Lord Nrsingadev, please kill him. Just like you killed Hiranyakashipu, tear him up. I don't want him in there anymore. Please rip him to shreds. And that's the prayer. We were saying, Om Namo Bhagavate Narasimhaya Namaste Jas Tejase Avir Avir Bhava Vajranaka, Vajradamsha, Kamasaya, Randaya, Randaya, Tamo, Grasa, Grasa, Om Swaha, Abhayam, Abhayam, Atmani, Bhuishta, Om Shram. And he's saying, oh my Lord, with these nails and teeth that are just like thunderbolts, please tear out the demon-like desires I have for material enjoyment in this material world. Tear them out. Rip them up to shreds for me, please. With your, yeah, like that. And in, you know, sort of a parallel to that, or an interesting juxtaposition to that, in his prayers, Prahlad Maharaj is talking to Lord Nrsingadev. He said, everyone's freaked out by the way you look right now, by the way. And he says, you know, you have high wedge-like ears. You got these conch ears. And, I mean, God, when he gets mad, it's like, he says, you're scaring all the elephants in the whole universe. They're running in every direction because of your roaring. And he said, you've got, your mane is soaked with blood. I mean, it's scary. He said, but I'm not afraid. I'm not afraid of this. Everyone else is afraid. He said, but there is, next verse he says, but there is something I am afraid of. He said, I'm afraid of your Maya. I'm afraid of that. Because he said, I'm afraid that I might get distracted from devotional service and I'll fall back down again into this wheel and I'll get caught in it and I won't come back out. It's so scary. Vishnu Maya. I'm afraid of your Vishnu Maya, not of you. And so that's, you know, we should feel like that, that the main, I should be very afraid of Maya and very careful. And this is the failure is the pillar of success. Those who have been burned before and made a comeback, they know. You've put your finger in there, it hurts. And one devotee was telling me who went away for a long time and he really got chewed up. He said, Maya, like, she doesn't play around. He said, she will rip out your entrails and wrap them around her walking stick as an ornament. She's not playing games, so don't play games with her. Don't think, you know, I'll do a little devotional service and I'll do a little whatever else and I'll be, you know, and I'll enjoy the best of both worlds and stuff. But Maya, she'll eviscerate you. And as an ornament, she'll hang the entrails around a stick and see, I got them. So be careful, you know, that, and that mood of Prahlad Maharaj is that careful, careful, careful. I'm the servant of the servant. I'm not even serving you, he says to Lord Nrsingadev. I'm not serving you. I'm serving your servants. I'm staying safe here. I'm the servant of the servant of the servant. I'm the servant of your servant. And that's my position. And I don't want anything except your service. I mentioned it earlier, but I'll just read the verse itself. It's in the fifth canto. We have fifth canto? It's good, you know, when you're having a hearing and chanting session, you judge how well it went by how many books you pull out. In our temple in ISV, we have the, you know, the full, we have a full reference library right in the temple room. And so, you know, we're all the time pulling out, pulling out, pulling out, pulling out. And the other feature is that now we have, during the broadcast, during the classes, we have projection on two screens. And whatever we're talking about, they're back there in the little booth there working all the time, you know, fingers are going like this. They get the verse up there so everyone can see it, not just in the temple, but on the broadcast as well. But when we set up like this, it's like several tables, because then we try to fill up all the tables with reference books. It's really... It's nice you can go through and get on a follow a thread for hearing and chanting. Sometimes when we do these long sessions in Govardhan, like keep pulling more books. By the end of the week, the whole desk is like piled high with books that we've gone, you know, you follow this one to that one and this one to that one. You can also do it on the Veda base, but it's not as fun because you don't have as much to show at the end. But it might take them a moment to get back, so maybe I can... Just look it up here really quickly. It's a verse that I think you'll like that answers the question in a very satisfying way from the fifth canto of the Bhagavatam, and it's from the residence of Jambudvipa. who are offering prayers to the Lord. And if I can just do a search here real quick. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Thank you very much. Hare Ram, Hare Rama, Rama Rama Hare, Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare. Oh, that's the wrong one. Sorry, wrong canto. Wrong canto. I was thinking of another verse. I was thinking of another verse which is also relevant to our conversation, but I'm gonna get you this verse. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Rama. Rama Rama. Okay. Hare Krishna. All inconvenience is regretted. Jata Shraddho Matkatasu Nirvina Sarvakarmasu Veda Dukat Makan Kaman Parityage Pyanishvara Tato Bajeta Mam Prita Shraddalur Dridanishchayaha Jushamanash Tatan Kaman Duko Darkam Shchagarayan. Having awakened faith in the narrations of my glories, being disgusted with all material activities, knowing that all sense gratification leads to misery, but still being unable to renounce all sense enjoyment, my devotee should remain happy and worship me with great faith and conviction. Even though he is sometimes engaged in sense enjoyment, my devotee knows that all sense gratification leads to a miserable result, and he sincerely repents such activities. Does that verse help? It's uncanny, isn't it? How? Yeah, you can take anything too far. That's why you have to be sincere, and you have to. You can't misuse these things. That's what you. Spiritual life and advancement is based on your sincerity, so you can misuse, and that's why we emphasize don't sin on the strength of chanting, because you misuse anything, and that's why we keep saying don't do that, don't go there. That's the minute that. Very, you know, a trace of that thought comes into my mental system, I should chase it away with a hatchet, because it's the most detrimental to advancement in devotional service.
Chapter and verse.
This is 11, 20, 27, and 28. That's Krishna speaking. He's speaking to Uddhava. And in previous verse, he tells that you should act according to your qualification. Sve sve adhikariya nishta saguna parikirtita. He said everyone has some qualification to move forward in devotional service. So if you act according to that, that's a good quality. And then he says, viparyos dosha syad ubayar esha nishchaya, that if you act outside of your qualification, it's a fault. So if you try to do more than you're qualified for, then it's a bad thing. It'll look bad and it won't help you. And then Bhaktivinoda also says in regard to that verse that if you do less than you're qualified for, it also looks bad. And you also won't advance in devotional service. It's kind of like the principle of Niyamagraha, which means two things at once. Don't not follow the process, but don't follow the process without making spiritual advancement. You have to do both at the same time. Yeah.
I'll give the balance there.
Well, remembering that it's Krishna's Maya. If you're aware of Maya and her connection to Krishna, then you're no longer in Maya. And you actually see her position. Like Vyasadeva, when he went into samadhi, he saw Krishna, and then he saw that Maya was standing nearby, but behind him, out of sort of embarrassment. And she was outside. And as long as we remember that we're servants of Krishna, and then, you know, Krishna protects us from falling into Maya. We have to be, anyway. I gave a quote the other day in the seminar when we talked about this to some degree, that the price of freedom is eternal vigilance. You have to be vigilant. And you'll notice that great acharyas, they're always analyzing their mental state to see, am I in the proper mentality right now? And also open for chastisement to make sure that I'm keeping the right mentality and so forth. Keeping oneself around those who are more advanced, who can correct us and so forth. Because as mentioned by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur in the Madhurya Kadambini, there's a way in which one of the ways that one gets swept away by Maya is when one begins to make a solid advancement in devotional service. That person actually overcomes sense gratification and then becomes a powerful person. And then people become attracted. And then they start coming around, and they like, and then the person gets swept away by that. Because they make advancement in devotional service, and everyone wants to offer them things and be with them and things like that. And then the next thing you know, it goes to their head, and then they're swept away. So he says that's an anartha. You have to be careful of that too. So there's a lot of ways in which Maya can sneak in. And therefore, Mahaprabhu said you have to always remain humble and check yourself and make sure that you're not becoming affected by Maya, either by becoming too lax or by becoming proud of the fact that you're not lax. So you have to be sincere. Natchari Armarman, Natchari Armarman, Natchari Armarman, Natchari Armarman.